Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Trainor. Thanks for listening. This episode is going to be a full Train of Thoughts episode since it's a holiday week. And we have Thanksgiving coming up. I'll give you the details in a sec. Before I do, though, if you missed any recent episodes, you're commuting over the Thanksgiving holiday, going to the archives, check out recent episodes. Kenny Mayne was on the pod last week. 2 weeks ago, Becky Lynch from WWE and Kevin Clark from The Ringer. 3 weeks ago, Al Michaels. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives, check them out, and subscribe and rate and review the SI Media podcast. Like I said, for this episode, just going to do a full Train of Thoughts podcast. So that means I bring in my friend Sal Licata from WFAN Radio in New York, full-time overnight host, and from SNY TV to chat about what's going on around the world of sports and pop culture. Sal, happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving. I was assuming that you were off this week and that we were going to be free of the pod, but here we are.
We're never free of the pod. Never.
Man, you'll be off. You're done after today, I'm sure, for what? Till Monday, right?
No, I'm working tomorrow. Tomorrow. Okay. Yeah. Got to promote the pod tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. We'll get into a lot of Thanksgiving stuff and the Thanksgiving NFL games, a couple of other topics. Let me start with this because it's fresh. We're taping on Tuesday afternoon. The Monday night game, Giants-Bucks, that was the least of the Manning cast that I have watched. I watched Julian Edelman in the fourth quarter, did not watch any of the second and third quarter with Condoleezza Rice and Kevin Hart, and I got to it a little late in the first quarter, so I didn't see Parcells, who I would have watched. But I did catch halftime, and Chris Berman does the highlights at halftime still, which is amazing. And, you know, it's so cool to get on Twitter and shit all over Chris Berman. Like, it's, you know, one of those Twitter things. But meanwhile, everyone I know loves Chris Berman, but you're on Twitter and everyone hates him. Anyway, he was doing Vikings highlights, and he was doing an Adam Thielen catch, and he said something like, he quoted the Lionel Richie song "Dancing on the Ceiling," and he said, "Oh, we're dancing on the Thielen." And I don't, it just hit me. Sometimes it just hits you, and it just hit me. It just hit me, and I was like, "This is phenomenal." Do you have any favorite Chris Berman nicknames from over the years?
Oh God,
because you do have to be our age, I think, to get the full appreciation of it.
I forget specifics, but I mean, there are so many over the years. You're watching him, and usually it's the random guys. It's not the popular player, right? It's just some random guy, and you don't even think of the wordplay. He's great. I'll tell you, I'm upset at myself for not being on this earlier with Berman, because I haven't really, I'll watch Monday Night Football, but usually the games suck. And at that point, I'm half in, half out. I'm certainly not watching the halftime show.
Right.
But I would make it a point now to watch him during the halftime show. It's great. I can't give you one specific, but I'm with you with just the nostalgia of it. He's fantastic, and he's brilliant at all these different names. I mean, there's got to be some kind of list compiled somewhere.
Oh, yeah. There's many.
With the greatest ones.
Yeah. In the early days of, like, the internet, and back when I was doing, like, Hot Clicks in, like, 07, 08, like, the list of Chris Berman nicknames was, like, easy layup content.
Oh, God.
And I always felt like he had better baseball names than other sports. I mean, Burt Be Home by 11. That's probably my favorite.
I, you know, as much as I love Berman, the only thing that I never was a fan of him doing was the stupid home run derby. Back, 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 back. Like, that just got old because it was so repetitive. But other than that, I've been a huge fan of Berman. I want to mention the Manning cast because this is fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you'll find this interesting because we've talked about this all year long, right?
Right.
So last night, now, you know, I'm doing the shows in New York. I'm on literally after the Giants post game. So I got to be up on what's going on with this game. My plan going in was, all right, I'm going to see. I can't miss Parcells. So I'll watch the Manning cast with Parcells and then I'll probably flip over. And I watched the Parcells thing. I stuck with the Manning cast, watched Kevin Hart, stuck with the Manning cast. All right, halftime, I'm going to go to the regular feed at that. Because there are things you miss. You miss penalties. You miss certain specific players. They're not, and because I'm following along on Twitter as well, I'm seeing the stuff that they're missing. So I was like, all right, second half, I need to go to the Manning, get off the Manning cast, go to the regular broadcast. I lasted probably a play before I was like, I'm addicted to the Manning cast. I can't do this. I don't, not only does the regular broadcast do nothing for me, I enjoy watching Peyton and Eli break it down. Even the guests are okay now. The problem is they're stepping on each other because of the delay. If right. not for that, it's the perfect broadcast. I love it. I'm addicted to it.
A big theme with the Manning cast for a few weeks now, there's a contingency out there that's in the camp of they got to get rid of the guests. And at first, I was not in that camp, and then I was, you're not going to get rid of all. I am firmly now in the camp, like, they need two guests, maybe. They don't need four. They don't need one each quarter. They need maybe two for the game. There's no way I can sit there and watch Kevin Hart or Condoleezza Rice. I just can't, there's a football game going on. Can't do it. So I was on the regular feed. I don't mind the regular telecast. I think it's fine. I don't have any issues with it. Is it my favorite? No, I can deal with it. But when, you know, I'm a big Edelman guy because I had written that I think he's going to be a big media star. And I thought he was great with them when he, you know, they had locked in the camera on Brady and Gronk having a conversation. And Edelman was doing the voiceovers, and I thought that was really good. And here's the thing. That game, by that point, the game's over. So you're there for the stories and the nonsense. You know, if a game's 24-24 in the fourth quarter, you better have the right guest on to break that all. You know, Russell Wilson was great. He was in the fourth quarter of a game with them, and he was good. But you don't need four guests with the Manning. Let Peyton and Eli do their thing.
Yeah, I think, and you know, I think last week we said they got to get away from the guests or whatever it was, which I would lean more toward getting away from the guests than having the guests. I also think, and I know why they would have a comedian or other type people, but I also think they'd benefit from just having football guests on, specifically in the fourth quarter. My bigger issue, though, because I actually enjoyed the Kevin Hart segment, and I'm not like a huge Kevin Hart fan, but I thought it was pretty funny and whatever. My issue is, with the delay, they have a problem. It happened all night. They're stepping. It's uncomfortable. As a viewer, it's uncomfortable. They're all three of them talking at the same time. And then they stop. And then you can't do it.
I like when the guest is talking and they go to commercial and Peyton just has to say, all right, well, thanks for coming on. And then
that's also awkward wrapping it up. So I don't know if that's just being in the media or from a viewer standpoint. They got to clean that aspect of it up. Then I could deal with the guests in moderation, one per quarter, whatever, if you just limit it. But I am, bottom line, I'm addicted to the broadcast. I can't get enough of those two.
Yeah, it's a very entertaining watch. And again, as long as you're not, I mean, you were into the game because you needed to watch for the Giants. For me, if the game's better, it's a little more hard to stay with it, but I usually end up staying with it. They're off this coming week. I think it's Bengals Browns, and they come back in 2 weeks. Patriots
Bills, Pats Bills in 2 weeks. See, so now that's what I'm thinking. All right, big game. I don't want to miss stuff because again, you do. It's not their fault. They're doing a show while watching a game. You're not going to hear who the penalty's on, what the penalty is. You know, there was one challenge that they thought was upheld, meanwhile it was overturned, or you know, whatever it was, the specifics of it. So you will miss some stuff. So for the bigger games, I'm thinking, I just want the broadcast. But I also think it's a detriment with Greasy. He does nothing for me. Riddick, Levy, whatever. I mean, Levy's a good guy, and I'm not saying he's a bad broadcast. There's no appeal there. With the Mannings, there's a draw. I'm drawn to that broadcast.
I think the biggest problem with the Monday night booth is three people. It should be two people. It's too much with three people. And that's where they got in trouble a couple of weeks ago, because when you have three people in the booth and you have an end of game, you know, let's say inside 2 minutes, where timeouts and clock management is the theme, it gets all mangled because there's three people trying. You need one analyst in there explaining what's going on with the clock and all that. So I despise any booth with three people in it. So, and I think that hurts Monday night for sure. There was one other thing I was going to say about the Manning cast, and now I forgot, but it must have not been.
Parcells, Hart, Rice.
Yeah. No, it was. I didn't watch, like I said, I didn't watch those two. I came into it in the fourth. So, so they're off for this week, and then they're back in 2 weeks on the Manning cast. The next topic, the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction documentary. The documentary is just called Janet. It's on Hulu. I watched it. I told Sal to watch it. He listened to me. He's a good friend. Again, it's one of those things. That was like prime time for us when that happened. you know, you have to, I think, be of a certain age to appreciate it. You have to understand how different the climate was back then without Twitter and all this stuff. You knew it was a big deal, obviously, you know, and if you're a Howard Stern guy like I am, that ended up, you know, the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake thing ended up getting the target put on Howard's back for a lot of the stuff he was doing back on K-Rock on terrestrial radio. But there's a point in the documentary where Ture is on and he comes on and he's just like, the flash of the breast was 9/16 of a second. And it's amazing that all of this damage and fallout because of 9/16 of a second of, you know, him ripping her shirt off and her breast flying out. I was stunned at the vitriol hurled towards Janet Jackson over this when you watch the documentary. It's so over the top and ridiculous. It makes you wonder, like, what the hell was going on at that time?
There's a billion things to this, and I did think it was a fascinating watch. And now it was part of like a series that's on Hulu. This was
like the New York Times and FX are teaming up to do a bunch of documentaries. Yeah,
and this was one part of that. Yeah. You're probably hearing you say that about the 9/16 or whatever. Think about how many people, how many more people probably saw that after the fact than they saw it live. I don't even remember seeing it live. And even if you did, would you even know, like, in that time, like, oh, what just like, did you comprehend it? I also remember, you know, I was working at the Fan at the time. I remember Mike and the dog talking about it afterward and like how big a deal it became. But it is bizarre to think back all those years ago. What, like, over that? It's we're at now. That is going to be the end of the world. Oh, my God. Crucified Janet Jackson.
I thought that was a funny point in the doc when they're like, OK, you know, the country completely freaked out over this. And like today we have the song WAP that's played on the radio. Like this is I also thought I had a couple of issues with the doc. It was a little too much like telling us how huge Janet Jackson was. I think everyone knows that going in. I didn't need
that was a nice refresher
when she was on she was on Good Times and Different Strokes. I'm not sure we needed that recap.
You know, I didn't even realize that. I remember her. Yeah, I didn't know it was her. I remember as a kid watching the show and I was like, oh my God, I had no idea that was young Janet Jackson.
The main issue I had was they were trying to tie in, they were trying to say that like she was this, what's the word? This like trailblazer for like women in pop music with sexuality and expressing their sexuality. I mean, that had been a thing before Janet Jackson, and even with some, you know, Madonna did it way before her and way more intense. So she wasn't like this, like they tried to like tie that in. Like this was part of her. What happened at the Super Bowl had nothing to do with her sexuality and being, you know, women can do whatever they want. It was a stunt in some way. Who was responsible? That's the biggest issue with the doc is you still don't know exactly how and why that happened.
Yeah, I want the answer. I want to know, was he supposed to rip off Timberlake one layer and it was supposed to be the red lingerie underneath, or was that the plan? Nobody clarified that.
Well, one thing I didn't know that I did learn in the doc, I didn't know that the original plan was he was supposed to rip off her skirt and she was supposed to have something underneath.
Full body suit or something,
And the NFL and CBS and all that, they said that was too much. Full body suit, right. I think that's what it was supposed to be.
Some kind of suit underneath.
So they did that in rehearsals and then they ixnayed that. Then there was supposed to be no ripping off and then he still ripped it off. Now, the doc at one point implies that like Janet and her wardrobe person sort of went on it. Mm-hmm. Then there was stuff about she was supposed to be wearing like a red bustier underneath and her breast wasn't supposed to be exposed. And I thought what was really strange is that like Justin Timberlake flew in like 20 minutes before they performed that.
Right, he lands 20 minutes before the show starts. I mean,
and then knows to rip her shirt off and that was all very shady and bizarre. I thought that whole thing where he just like comes in 20 minutes before he's supposed to perform from another country.
The Timberlake to me did not come across well. A young Timberlake. I mean, I know he's young and stupid and whatever at the time, but they showed some things that were not very flattering to him. I'm sure he cringes at now watching back. He definitely should have got more blowback. I don't understand how Janet gets the 95% of the hit and Timberlake gets a little slap on the wrist. And how about Les Moonves?
Well, that ends up being the whole issue.
Yeah.
I disagree with you. I think the to me, that the one thing that Doc did do was it gave me clarity on what happened afterwards. CBS wanted Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson to apologize on the Grammys. He agreed to it and he did it. She did not agree to it, did not show up to the Grammys.
Right.
And then he went to the CBS offices in LA and apologized to Les Moonves. She did not. Now, obviously, this whole thing that you got to go apologize to Les Moonves, and Les Moonves is pulling all these strings with the Grammys and who's apologizing, is he's the bad guy in this.
Correct.
The number one bad guy. It's Les Moonves. But I understand now at least what happened. If she would have apologized on the Grammys and apologized to Les Moonves, then maybe the blowback then on her goes down a little bit. Justin Timberlake did the apologies. I think they use the expression kiss the ring in the dock.
Yeah.
She did not. That's what ended up helping him go up and her
get
go down,
it,
not
right.
the incident.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I'll tell you this.
Les Moonves is the bad guy.
Oh, and, right. And everybody involved in that whole situation that ripped Janet Jackson, Moonves, all those media people, they owe her a freaking apology.
100%.
And I still can't believe, it's disgusting to me to think of the backlash that she got at the time for something as... It's so insignificant right. as that. Oh, big deal. I mean, come on. What wasn't even Little Kim? Now I forget the timeline. Remember Little Kim
right.
coming
yes.
out? I mean,
yes.
that was to be, she was on TV for a good, 15 right. minutes with her breast exposed and they were playing around with it on TV. That's okay. But Janet Jackson flipping off that thing is not. And then where we are today, it's ridiculous. The blowback. Who do we think we are? Or did we think we are as a society where right. all, we're high and mighty that you're going to rip Janet Jackson for a piece of wardrobe being ripped off in a, what is a show? I mean, get over for yourselves, NFL, CBS, everybody. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, with it, one of my first or second biggest takeaway when I was done watching it was I cannot believe this woman, for all intents and purposes, lost her career over that incident. It just makes absolutely no sense on any level whatsoever. Like, to hold that against her in such a way was so absurd that you can't, it's hard to imagine it happened. Now,
they're
what's
not gonna
interesting,
play her new record. I mean, you're not gonna play her new record because right. of that. Give me a break.
Now, see, and also, you know, the producer, there was a woman producer, Sally, was that the name?
I felt bad for, I think it is Sally, yeah, where you could tell that she was okay. remorseful. She kind of gets screwed over by
you're a nicer guy than me. You felt bad for her. For me, the second she said that she started crying after Justin Timberlake ripped off her Jackson's top, I was like, this woman's crazy. What, you're crying?
Well, she
really?
Knew she was going to get
crying?
In trouble. She that's
okay,
the point.
But this was not that big of a deal that you needed to be crying. What you needed to do is go to your bosses and say, listen, I don't know how this happened. I had nothing to do with this, but can we get some perspective here? It's not
right.
the end of the world here. It was nice. She's crying. What are you crying for? It's
well,
ridiculous.
I mean, you start getting sponsors ticked off, and I know firsthand.
But that's because no one had the, nobody had the guts to stand up for Janet Jackson. That's what the issue
which
was.
Which is appalling.
Right.
I just don't comprehend where we were, how that is. Looking back, there are some things. Look, we go back and listen to an old Howard Stern clip. You look back at some of that stuff and sometimes cringe and be like, holy crap, how did he get away with that? This I look back at and saying, what is the big deal? News stories everywhere, top news pages. Oh, Janet Jackson, how dare she expose her breast, wardrobe malfunction. I mean, give me a break.
And,
how pathetic.
And here's the great sports tie-in out of all this. The great sports tie-in in all this is that I give him credit. Paul Tagliabue, who was the NFL commissioner at the time, did the doc. I was surprised. And he said, now, again, another one of those things that gets lost over time. If you think about that Super Bowl, everyone thinks the halftime show was Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake wasn't even announced. That was like a surprise. And the halftime show was Kid Rock, P. Diddy, and Nelly, in addition right. to Janet Jackson. And Tagliabue is on camera saying he had heard from people for weeks before the Super Bowl that they were worried about the lyrics with Diddy, the lyrics with Nelly, the lyrics with Kid Rock. Kid Rock ripped a flag and put it over his head, and people saying he disrespected the flag because he wore the flag as a shirt. And he said he got absolutely no pre-Super Bowl show comments about anyone worried about Janet Jackson. They were all worried about the other three. And then it ended up where the Janet Jackson thing ends up being this big hullabaloo, which...
Why? Because one person or two people were offended by it? Oh, my God. A semi-exposed breast for 9/16 of a second. How are my kids ever going to survive in this world? I can't imagine. That's,
in the doc, they go to get into how there was this thing called the Parents Television Council, which from... Because they used to go after the WWF and Vince McMahon, and they used to go after Howard. And them combined with a Republican senator who wanted to clean up the airwaves, quote unquote, they sort of combined to push this thing. Then the FCC fines CBS all this money. That's where Les Moonves comes in. And then, again, this is really all about... This was Les Moonves, the president of CBS, who I think put the dagger into Janet Jackson more than anyone.
By telling people, hey, don't put her on TV. Don't play her records.
Right, like Justin Timberlake.
She didn't kiss his ass. She didn't kiss the ring, so to speak. Right.
A week later, Justin Timberlake is at the Grammys. She wasn't because she didn't apologize.
Disgusting.
They show in the doc Justin Timberlake at the Grammys apologizing for what he did. The one thing I don't understand, though, is I'm surprised, though, the hit on Janet Jackson lasted so long. Okay, when this happened, it was a white-hot fever pitch. Maybe she lays low for 2-3 months, and then she comes. Like, this lasted for years. It's so insane to me. Insane.
That's what's going to... I'll tell you, from my perspective, I don't even really think about that incident. When I think back at Janet Jackson, I'll think about that Rolling Stone cover. I think about the albums. I think about the music. I don't think about that incident. But then to watch this back again, it reminded me how big of a deal that was. They got to make this right, man. They screwed her over. That's not right. They need to
it's too late now.
Well, I mean, why can't they have her perform at the Super Bowl? She probably wouldn't even do it.
Right.
But
yeah, that no, right. He did. And yeah,
right. She did it years later. Yeah. So why not say, hey, you know what? And for the record, as much crap as everybody was giving Timberlake, I thought his tweet or whatever it was, his post apologizing to not only Janet, but for his behavior in the past and to Britney Spears as well, I think that showed maturity and accountability. I think he deserves credit for that. He did the right thing. Other people need to come forward and do the same thing for Janet. And I do think the NFL should do right and at least offer her and say, look, we are terribly sorry for the way that things went down. We apologize. We offer you the halftime show if you would be so kind as to accept. She probably wouldn't do it, but at least they should do that.
That's why I said I thought it was a little over the top in the venom that the doc has for Justin Timberlake, because you have to think of the time. At the time, he's probably in his early 20s. He's putting out an album. He's trying to get his career going. So, yeah, he's going to kiss Les Moonves' ass, do his apologies, and try to keep his career going. And most people would have done the same thing.
He didn't want any negative feedback. He's at a point that he wants to make everybody happy and keep, you know, making money and move his career.
It kind of makes it out like he intentionally tried to sabotage Janet Jackson. I don't believe that to be true. But
or that his, you know, she was torn down and he got launched because of that. I think the timeline may look like that. And I do think she was hurt, obviously, by the incident. I don't think that launched Justin Timberlake to another stratosphere.
Right. It, to me, not to repeat myself, but it all comes down to those apologies that he did in person and then at the Grammys. You didn't watch Curb this week, you told me?
No, because we're taping on Tuesday. Normally we tape on Wednesday. I had the Giants last night. You know, I get the overnights. I took an hour and I watched that Janet show instead. I have not watched Curb yet. I will do so maybe today.
It was a good episode. We'll get into it next week.
Where are we at now? 5 or 6 so far on this year?
I think that was the 5th.
Okay. And what do we know how many we're getting? 10, 12?
10.
Okay, 10. Yeah,
the one thing I would say about this week without any spoilers, and we've said it before, I'm not going to give anything away that happened. Vince Vaughn has been so great. He was great again this week. Yeah. Vince Vaughn, he has a very, very good scene with Larry early in the episode. And Vince Vaughn has been great on this show, I have to say.
I enjoy his work, yes.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Thanksgiving games here and a bunch of things. First things first.
I saw the call.
I am strictly in the camp that the NFL needs to stop with the Lions. People think it's like cute and fun. Like, I don't think it's cute. It's not fun. Like, it's so fun to watch the Lions lose. Oh, it's tradition with the Lions. Like, I don't think it's funny or cute. Like, I want to see a good football game. Like, it needs to stop.
These games in general, I think they haven't been great matchups in recent years, at least off the top of my head. But with the Lions in particular, you know going in that of the three, one is going to be a horrible game because the Lions are in it.
But my thing is, like someone on Twitter said to me, like, oh, bad teams can still play an entertaining game. I don't want to watch teams that have no playoff hopes. Like, there's nothing intriguing about it to me.
There's no, I don't want to watch this game. Bears, so you, Lions, it's horrible.
So you agree with me that the tradition should end?
Yeah, and I remember reading last year your column. Now, look, there was a part of me, I grew up, look, we both did. I grew up watching Barry Sanders and Wayne Font. So I like though, I loved Barry Sanders as a kid. And I thought it was cool back then to watch those Lions, even though they weren't very good, to watch them play on Thanksgiving. And yeah, at times, generally the Lions maybe would be scheduled against a quality opponent. So even though the Lions aren't good, you still see the superstar opponent. But I think the idea of the Lions, who have just been so bad for so long, I know it's tradition. How about this? Move the game then. Move the time. I don't want to watch them at the first game of the day. I'd rather have them on a dinner when I'm actually eating or doing something else. At 12:30, I want to watch the game.
That part of it I don't mind because I can blow it off, spend time with family, then we eat and then get to the Cowboy game quickly.
You watch. Now, let me ask you, your personal schedule, which games is it easier to watch of the three?
Oh, the 8 o'clock game. That's when I have peace and quiet.
And then the other two a little bit more hectic?
Well, I usually go to my aunt's in the middle of the first game.
Okay.
And then I watch the entire Cowboy game at my aunt's house. So
I'm watching the first game probably more than anything because people are setting up and you're still getting
ready. I'm not locked into that first game because I'm getting ready. Then I drive to my aunt's. You got to say hello. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving, blah, blah, blah. You miss it. But by 4:30, then that whole game I watch. You know, we have this.
Okay, that's
fair. Not one of these families that shuts the TV off when we eat. We leave the TV on when we eat. We'll turn the sound on and we'll keep the game on. So
me too. That's fair. I guess you're right about that. The time, maybe that is the right time if you're going to put it there. But I'm with you on the bigger picture. It should be rotating. Get the freaking Lions off.
They're never going to change it because, when I wrote this, I heard from a lot of people in TV who would know, ratings people. They're never going to move it because here's how and it makes sense. This is how the NFL looks at it. 25 million of us assholes are going to watch that game on Thursday. Like, we could sit here and bitch and complain about Bears Lions. We're going to watch
the first game
the Bears Lions. We're going to bet it. There's fantasy. 25 million people will watch that game on Thursday. So the NFL looks at it like this. One, we're not getting 25 million viewers for any Lions game on a Sunday at 1:48 or wherever. And why put a good game there? You know, why put a potential Sunday 4:25 game there? When that's going to, for example,
you're gonna draw anyway.
Right. Cowboys Chiefs this past Sunday, which was a terrible game, close, but not exciting plays. Most watched game of the season, over 28 million viewers for that game.
Right.
Why would they move it? They're getting 28 million for a Sunday 4:25.
And they're going to get way more, or relatively speaking.
And they'll get 25 million viewers for Lions. If you had Bears Lions on a Sunday, you're going to get 3 million people. Yeah, right. So you could put it on that and everyone watches it. So the NFL is not going to, they don't want to shoot their shot somewhere else with the Lions when they're guaranteed to get
viewers. It doesn't matter who they play. I know, but from a fan's perspective, these games are special. You always look at the Thanksgiving. When the schedule comes out, Thanksgiving Day is one of the most looked at, if not the most looked at week or day of the year. What do we got on Thanksgiving? Because you all know that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to be sitting around the table, eating, talking with your family, watching football all day long. And you know from the get-go, you're already half out of it with the Lions. Regardless of who they play, it's generally a wasted game. And now you look at it, Lions, Bears? I mean, come on. And the way that it breaks with the injuries, there's nothing to watch in that game. It's dreadful.
You got to bet it.
Even with that, now I do the traditional Turkey Day teaser like no other. I mean, come on, you got to be involved. If you're not doing a Turkey Day teaser, you're doing Thanksgiving wrong.
After all that, we're both going to be locked in. That's why the NFL's never going to move the game.
It's just a matter of getting to 4:30. Usually I lose by the stupid Lions game. For years, I've always gotten sucked in. I won't take the Lions, and they always lose.
I would pay money. I would pay money to get Joe Buck and Troy Aikman to get hooked up to a lie detector. And say, Joe, Troy, how do you feel about spending your Thanksgiving calling this game?
Oh, my God. I saw your tweet. I thought that was funny about they should call in and say that they...
false positive.
Well. Yeah.
Got to wrap it up. Got to rapid test the positive. Can't call the game Friday. false positive. I'm
Nobody
ready to go
wants to do a bad game. Even if it were the Lions, if you scheduled them against Tom Brady and the Bucs, we know it would be a squash game, but you get to see Tom Brady and the Bucs. What is the appeal of watching these two teams? And I'll take it even further. You know, I know it's the Cowboys and they've been terrific this year. Actually, one of my favorite teams to watch. I don't love that matchup either. Cowboys, Raiders.
Well, that's the whole... Then you get into... Listen, before the season, I get what the NFL is doing there. They're bringing in the Raiders. They're going to get... That will be the highest rated game of the season by far. And I have no issue with the Cowboys playing every Thanksgiving at 4:30. It's the Lions. It's not funny
anymore.
Right,
but I want a prime matchup. I want to...
The schedule before the season. You don't know who's going to be good and, you know, good and bad there.
I know, but if you could give me a... Look, the Bears Lions, I know it's a division rival, but obviously with those two, who cares about that division rivalry? If you could give me the Cowboys, even the Cowboys Eagles, or I know it can't be the Cowboys Redskins every year, or whatever,
Washington football team.
Yeah, it can't be Cowboys Washington every year. I don't know. I just don't love that. Or anticipate one of the better teams. Did anybody really think the Raiders are going to be a great team in the AFC this year?
Well, I think they, you know, they're one of those teams that have national appeal, so that's why I think they went there. Now, the tradition the league needs to start, which I've been on this for like the last 3 years, they're never going to do it. It's just in my own fantasy world. There needs to be a Friday morning after Thanksgiving, 9 a.m. London game. Hmm. Let me explain. Most people are off from work. You got college all day in the afternoon on Friday. NFL, 9 o'clock, you wake up, you're ready to vomit from all everything you ate the night before. You're going to be on the couch. You don't want to do Black Friday. Friday is a couch/chair day, 9 a.m. NFL from London. They need to do that.
Not a bad idea. See, here's where you and I have now separated a little bit. You're living the life that I'm envious of, that I used to live. When I was not married and not a father, I would agree with you and say, and I remember saying, give me the Thursday night Thanksgiving game. It's not enough with 12 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Give me the Thursday night game. I'd be on board for a London, 9 a.m., a London, you know, Friday morning, 9 a.m. football game. Of course, now with other responsibilities, the Thursday night game's too much for me. So, yes, from the mentality of if I were sitting home with nothing to do.
What are you going to be doing Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning?
Well, I should be working. But aside from that.
Well, then. Aside from that,
the point is, imagine me pitching to my wife after watching football the majority of Thursday, even during a holiday. She knows all day Sunday for the last 11 weeks. I've been locked into the football downstairs, basically on my own. Imagine me saying Friday morning, the day after Thanksgiving, which is the day you want people want to decorate. They want to go shopping, want to spend some family time. And I got to watch a football game. She'd kill me. I wouldn't be able to survive that.
First of all, if you go shopping that day, you're a sociopath. Let's start with that. And the decorating can happen at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, I guess.
You're only locked in from 9 to 12. Then you have the whole day free. That's the beauty of the 9 a.m. London game.
You got big college games. You're right. There's just...
You're not going to be watching that on Friday afternoon.
No, I'd have to get divorced to do so. But I miss those days. I remember whether it's texting with you or Moose, Melusis, and we used to bet these games. I mean, that's a huge college football day, the Friday after Thanksgiving. And now I'm married with a kid. It's over. Those days are over.
Just whatever you do, don't tell me you're going shopping on that Friday.
I don't actually think.
Killed in a stampede at Walmart. All right. I need your Thanksgiving food power rankings. Give me like top five if you can.
All right. It's got to be what? The traditional food or what I have?
Whatever you're going to eat on Thursday, top five.
My number one thing is we've been doing a family tradition, rice balls. So we just made them actually the other day, deep fried old school Italian rice balls. That's my number one, no question. I'm a sides guy. I could do without the turkey. Good old fashioned mashed potatoes. I love the antipasto. I mean, see, this is the tradition. Show up at my mom's house before kickoff for the Lions. Hey, mom, dad, when he was around, hey, get the antipasto ready. Not that I was ever helping. I was getting there. I wanted to eat the mozzarella, the salami, the ham. I'm eating all that as I'm watching the Lions blow my teaser in the first part of the day. So I like the antipasto. I like the sides. That would probably be my top three. Rice ball, mashed potatoes, the antipasto. I'm good with that. You can keep
everything
else.
You're a way, way, way better Italian than I am.
You don't like the antipasto?
This is my issue that I've gotten into with my family for 30 years. Okay? I get you want to be these hardcore Italians and you're from Italy and everything's got to be glutton and all that. Can we just have a normal Thanksgiving just once where we just have turkey and mashed potatoes and stuffing? We don't need antipasto and the fried cauliflower and all the cheese and the why? Can we just have a normal thing? No, can never just be a normal thing.
So give me your big turkey guy.
No, listen, I have like one slice of turkey for tradition because it's Thanksgiving. You have turkey. Be a human being. Be part of society. Lather it up in gravy and suck it up and eat
it. Douse it in stuffing and mashed potatoes.
But my aunt makes the best stuffing with the sausage in it. You got to have the sausage in the stuffing. If there's no sausage in the stuffing, then get at it. And then,
now, is it bread stuffing?
Yeah.
Okay, bread stuffing. We with do the sausage.
Yeah. Give me the stuffing. Give me the mashed potatoes. That's it. I'm good to go. It's Thanksgiving. We don't need to reinvent the wheel here. We used to have pasta before we had the turkey.
And really?
We cut that out. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it. See, the main core, who likes turkey? You're right. You have it because it's tradition. And I love the smell of it in the house. I hate cutting it too. Now that I've had to take over those dudes, you ever cut a turkey? That's a pain in the neck. Oh,
no,
my God.
My uncle does it. I stand next to him and I criticize him the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I do.
Until you do it, you don't realize how difficult
it
actually is.
But if you have good gravy, then the turkey can be enjoyable.
Yeah. What about desserts? Are you big into pie? You're not really a sweets guy, right?
I'm more of a food guy. Yeah, I don't care about the desserts.
Agreed.
Just give me the food. Give me like 8 pounds of mashed and stuffing.
Agreed. 100%.
And that's it. Yeah. All right. Well, enjoy your rice balls. And your antipasto and not being able to watch football on Friday.
What's the play? Come on, you got to give the audience a Turkey Day teaser, no? Or at least whatever you're going to play as of now. Have you looked at the Lions yet?
I mean, the Lions will probably get their first win, I would assume. Thanksgiving at home.
Andy Dalton. What's the spread in that game? You have the spreads up?
I can tell you right now.
I'm curious.
I shut my phone off.
We're betting it, so you might as well look at the spreads anyway. You have to bet Dallas.
I will say this. I don't know what the line is, but I think I will bet New Orleans at night because I think the Bills are done.
Wow. That's a bold prediction.
I hate that it's Trevor Siemian, but they're at home, and they haven't played well either. But I think the Bills are kind of a mess right now. I think the Bills are kind of a mess. I think New Orleans at home on Thanksgiving, I think that could be it. All right, so the Bears are 3.5-point favorites. I'm going to bet the Lions.
Bet the Lions in that game. I hate myself for doing it, but I will bet the Lions in that game.
The Cowboys are 7.5-point favorites.
I will probably bet Dallas. I think the Raiders stink.
That's one where I would probably tease Dallas with a Sunday game. I'm not laying 7.5, but I'm not.
Now, wait, why wouldn't you just do the Turkey Day teaser, tease the Lions up, tease Dallas?
You're saying
down.
This like it's a real thing, Turkey. Like, that's your thing. I don't want to, because I don't want to bet a Bears, Lions, or Saints, Bills in a teaser.
Oh, but you're going to bet them in some way, shape, or form?
Well, the night game, I'll do some props, probably. Oh, no, the Saints are getting 5.5. I'll bet the Saints.
Right.
Here's what I'm going to bet. I'm going to bet the Lions plus 3.5.
Okay.
I'll bet the Saints plus 5.5. And then I'll bet a two-team teaser with the Cowboys, and I'll find a Friday afternoon college game.
All right, so you're going with the Turkey Day weekend teaser. I just like the traditional teaser. I would probably go...
Well, why don't you just bet the game straight up?
I can't bet that Sunday. No, because I don't... maybe I'll do that with the Lions. Yeah, maybe I'll do that with the Lions and Cowboys. I don't like the Sunday game, the Thursday night game. I don't know which way I'm going to go with that. I would not bet against the Bills, and I hate the Saints. So I could see that game going either way. I'll probably just do the two-team Turkey Day teaser, Lions, Cowboys. Give me the home teams.
Actually, maybe here's what I'll do. I'll do a Cowboys-Ohio State teaser.
What's the line in that game?
Eight.
That's on Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
At noon?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a must watch.
All right. Thanks to Sal Licata for a full Train of Thoughts episode. And if you missed any recent episodes, check them out in the archives. Last week on the SI Media podcast, Kenny Mayne. 2 weeks ago, Becky Lynch and Kevin Clark. 3 weeks ago, Al Michaels. subscribe, rate, and review. Have a happy, safe, healthy Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.